As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to The Athletic Hockey Show, the Wednesday Roundtable Edition. I am Rob Fiesel from CBC Sports, alongside Jesse Granger from The Athletic. Who's Sarah Sivian this week, Jesse? Just bailing on us. I mean, is she sleeping? Is she, what is she doing?
It's like the NHL. You never know who's going to be there each night. The players, the teams show up and half the players are there and half of them aren't.
Sarah Sivian has been postponed today because of COVID protocol, and she's not going to be. No, Sarah's busy doing some work stuff, and she'll join us again next week. But we got so much. I mean, to give people a little bit of a peek behind the curtain. I mean, we obviously discuss what we are going to discuss on the show before we actually discuss it on the show, and we got a ton to cram in. We're going to talk Evander Kane. We're going to talk Ken Holland, Bobby Clark. How often do you get to talk about Bobby Clark on this show? I can't wait to hear what you have to say about Jack Eichel's first practice with the Vegas Golden Knights. And man, so much to talk about. And Julian McKenzie is going to join us, a good friend of the show. And of course, the associate editor at The Athletic NHL and co-host of The Chris Johnson Show. He's going to join us to do what he does best in the second segment. But Jesse, I thought we were done talking about Evander Kane.
Yeah.
Every time we bring it up, I'm like, okay, that's it, right? Because I remember asking you and Sarah if you guys thought he was going to sign with the team this year. You both said no, if memory serves me correctly. Yeah. I was in complete agreement with you. And now we've got, you know, his contract's terminated by the Sharks. Of course, the PA files a grievance because they're going to file a grievance anytime something like this happens. And then Ken Holland speaks, general manager of the Edmonton Oilers, because the Oilers are in a complete free fall right now. And he's asked about it and he said, quote, "I believe in second chances. It's hard to be perfect." And he did confirm that he has spoken to Evander Kane's agent. My question is, does Ken Holland know how to count? Because by my count, he is far beyond second chances.
Yeah, I mean, way beyond. And it's happened on multiple teams. It's all different types of terrible decisions he's made. I remember like the day that they unconditionally waived him, someone asked me and I'm like, he'll probably get a contract in Russia in the KHL. Yeah. Would be my guess. The fact that there are not just one but multiple NHL teams offering him something it's interesting. It's hard to act surprised because this is sports and we see it in the NFL. We see it everywhere. Guys that are talented get as many chances as these GMs can give them.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point, right? I mean, on paper, you look at what you're going to get. Let's pretend he is a faceless hockey player. And you just look at a guy who has scored 20 plus goals in six straight seasons. You look at a guy who's a physical force out there. You look at a guy who, let's be honest, his ability to help a hockey team with his hockey skills is pretty unquestioned.
Yeah.
But it's the baggage that comes with it. I mean, he has left a trail of controversy and negativity at every stop of his NHL career.
Yeah. And I think, like, when I look at those teams, we don't know if Tampa Bay is one of them, but I have seen Tampa Bay's name floated in, like, for me, thinking like, okay, what's the best way for this to work smoothly? I think a situation like Tampa has a much better chance of working, where he can just be like, shut up and sit in the corner. We're two-time Stanley Cup champions. We have all these superstars. Like, just be over there, be a third line guy, play the minutes you have. Whereas in Edmonton, I feel like there's a lot more pressure. Things haven't gone as well there. Things, if they trade for him and then things don't go well right away, like, I feel like there's a lot more that can go wrong in a place like Edmonton, rather than, like, I feel like Tampa is stable. I feel like they're built to handle something like that.
Yeah, like you said, I think the key there is, not only is it a Canadian city where hockey's a religion in Edmonton, they've lost five in a row. They're out of a playoff spot right now. They've got two of the best offensive players on the planet. Nothing is going right. And you want to add this super controversial player to your roster. And I saw that, and Ken Holland kept saying, nobody's perfect. Everybody makes mistakes. He's just made so many, and they're such ridiculous mistakes. They're not mistakes that you could almost relate to. I mean, let's be honest, right, Jesse. How many times do you hear, this 22-year-old kid got drunk and did this, did that, and all you and your buddies look at each other and go, yeah, I did the exact same thing when I was 22. I didn't fake a vaccination, paper to be able to avoid getting the jab. I don't bring that negativity. And the one thing that really sticks in my mind, when this whole thing was going down with San Jose, all the reports that his teammates wanted nothing to do with him. That, to me, is, you want to bring that into your dressing room? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Right. I completely agree. Plus, that's not the trade Edmonton should be making. I cannot for the life of me figure out why Marc-Andre Fleury isn't on the Oilers. I can't figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
Unless he's told Chicago that they're on his no trade list. Like, he's got a partial no movement clause. It's not a full no movement, obviously, otherwise he'd still be here in Vegas. But I mean, the Blackhawks are clearly not going anywhere. They can absorb half that salary. You can get Marc-Andre Fleury for $3.5 million. I cannot for the life of me figure out why he hasn't been in Edmonton for 2 weeks.
And he would thrive in Edmonton. He would, and I don't just mean on the ice. I mean, he would embrace it. He would love it there. Oh, I would love to see Marc-Andre Fleury there. And their goaltending situation has been a complete mess all year long. I mean, that's what happens when you put all your faith in an older goaltender who, when he gets hurt, now suddenly you've got somebody who's got to pick up the slack in Mikko Koskinen. But man, he would thrive there. That Ken Holland press conference was really, it was interesting. I found myself shaking my head a lot. I mean, he talked about how he doesn't like to fire coaches midseason. I mean, it's interesting that I found myself thinking some of the things I was thinking about Ken Holland yesterday, given that this is a GM who would show the rest of the league how to grow a team and to keep a team in an elite position for so many years. He was the benchmark. You know, what Detroit did, not only would they succeed, but while they were succeeding, he was building the future of that team. And now you look at what's going on in Edmonton. He took the blame. He said, it's on me, but wow, the mighty have fallen. That's all I kept thinking when I was watching that press conference.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like Edmonton is just, it just seems like they can't, like, they get Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. You think that'd be like a Stanley Cup run, and that hasn't happened. It just seems like it's hard to win there for whatever reason.
Oh, they cannot afford a missed playoff. This team can't. You can't have not only the best player on the planet, but the guy who's the best player by leaps and bounds. And you also have another guy who's always challenging for the scoring title as well. It's a mess there. We'll have to see, but I love the Marc-Andre Fleury. You know, I would love to see just the way he thrives in a city like that. Moving on, how often do we get to talk about Bobby Clarke anymore? this one just kind of came out of nowhere for me. He was on the Cam and Strick podcast. And I'm going to just read you the quote just so we don't misquote it or anybody blames me for saying I didn't do this right. But quote, he was talking way back about the 2017 entry draft. And he said, none of our scouts wanted Nolan Patrick. They wanted Makar. Of course, he went on to be a superstar and Patrick hasn't played. But Hextall made that choice himself. And there were other choices that were made at our drafts that we're paying for. He also went on to say, Hexy made some huge mistakes. First off, I love that you're ripping him and you still use his nickname. if I'm ripping somebody, I'm not using Hexy. Hey, Hexy, you're brutal. Where did this come from? Yeah, I mean, it just feels so out of the blue, doesn't it?
You don't see this often in hockey with guys criticizing like and kind of like peek, giving us a peek behind the curtain of possibly what happened. Like, I want to believe him that that's what happened, but it's the first thing I thought just out here in Vegas from my perspective is like, poor Nolan Patrick, like this guy.
Like, yeah.
Wasn't like he was he was attacking Hexy, not Nolan Hexy. Patrick, but Nolan Patrick is yet again in the news for like this poor guy. He just came back from injury. He's really struggling here in Vegas. He has not shown any glimpse of the number two overall pick that people thought may happen when he came here. He's the connection to Kelly McCrimmon. That hasn't happened. His career is not going well. And I just thought, man, this poor guy is like drug back into the spotlight again.
Yeah, I thought it was a cheap shot a bit because I'm not going to pretend that I'm one of the guys who knows every, you know, prospect come draft time. There are people who know a heck of a lot more than I do in that subject. But just when I heard that, I went back and started looking at mock drafts from 2017 just to remind, and nobody had Cale Makar ahead of Nolan Patrick. And hindsight, if I may use the oldest cliche in the book, hindsight's 2020. Yes, right. You'll look at what Cale Makar is doing now. Look at what Cale Makar is doing now, he's number one overall pick. And you're bringing this up as if Ron Hextall made this huge mistake and he's the reason we're paying for all this. It just felt like a weird drive-by.
Yeah, if I remember right, it was Heischer and Patrick at the top of that class, right? And I think the debate was basically those two. Like, it's one of them will be one and one of them will be two. And I think it was Patrick's like injury concerns that kind of pushed him down to two, if I remember right. That was like right when I first started covering hockey. But I don't pretend to be a draft expert. We've got guys like Corey Pronman and Scott Wheeler, and anytime a player is drafted, a player is traded for, I go straight to those guys. I'm like, tell me who this guy is. I am not watching Canadian junior hockey. I'm not going to pretend like I'm an expert on them.
I do it every year. It's the one aspect of the game too that people like you and me in our jobs, we could fully admit we're like, no, there's people that know a lot better, a lot more than I do about this. Let's
it's hard enough to watch all the NHL games. I can't watch all the junior hockey games.
not if I want to like stay married and be happy and everything. Like, there's so much. Like, I watch a lot of hockey. If I suddenly started saying, well, I got a triple header of CHL games this Saturday, I'm going to be sitting on the couch all day, it's just not happening. So you go to the people who do that. But yeah, felt like a weird drive, but I wanted to bring that up. And you know what Makar's doing this year. He's got 16 goals in 29 games. Fastest to score 16 goals as a defenseman since, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this guy's name properly, Bobby Orr. I don't know if we've heard of that guy. Like, when your name starts getting brought up with Bobby Orr, just incredible. How was that Jack Eichel practice?
Fine.
I mean, you know, I love every now and again when there's, you know, it's the games that are usually highly anticipated. I love highly anticipated practices because it's a lot of the videos and stuff we see are from people like you who are at the rink.
Yeah, it was fun. It's the season is long, right? And like, you're going to practice every single day. It can get monotonous. It's nice to have a like excitement to go to the rink today. And that was yesterday for the Golden Knights. Everyone knew they had quite a few fans in the building. Everyone knew Jack Eichel would be making his first skate with teammates ever in Vegas. So it was pretty cool. He just kind of glided around out there. He didn't do a whole lot, but I mean, he did stay after practice. I was impressed. The guy, it's his first day in Vegas, and he stayed after with the backup goalie, Logan Thompson, to put in some extra work, not just getting work for Eichel, but like he was doing goalie drills with him. He was shooting through pylons to get Logan Thompson some extra work. So I was like, all right. I mean, he was gassed by the end of it. You could tell he was not used to NHL practices, but he still had that ridiculous release. There were a couple times where he let one rip and you're just like, oh my God, are you kidding me? He looked like Jack Eichel.
Yeah. And you know, obviously wearing the non-contact jersey, I don't think he needed it. I don't think too many guys are going to accidentally lay out Jack Eichel. And according to Peter DeBoer, he's going to be wearing that a lot. But of course, in the age that we live in, of course, people started bringing up, when's he coming? When's he actually going to be physically ready to play? That's going to be a while, right?
Yeah, so this whole time, it kind of seems like the coaches and Kelly McCrimmon, whenever they talk about it, they're trying to temper expectations. And then Eichel will kind of push those expectations a little forward. Yesterday, someone asked him about the Olympics because he had mentioned prior that he wanted to play in the Olympics. And someone asked him just like, I know you aren't really healthy right now, but like, what did you think about that decision? And he goes, I think his exact words were, I'm not going to say that I was going to be healthy and ready to play in the Olympics, but I'm also not going to say that I wasn't going to be healthy and ready to play in the Olympics, which the Olympics are, what, 2 weeks away? You know better than I do.
Start on February 4th, yeah.
Yeah.
February 4th, yeah.
So, I mean, that's not very far away. Now, is he going to be playing in NHL games on February 4th? Highly, highly unlikely. I do not expect him to play before the Olympic break, but that Olympic break is so long. It feels like the beginning of that, like when they first come back from the All-Star and the Olympic break. To me, that seems like a very realistic timeline for Eichel to return. They have to figure out what they're going to do under the cap to get him on the ice because he doesn't currently fit under the cap. But
yeah
I think he could play maybe earlier than some of us were thinking.
Okay, but he's got that luxury because of the team he plays for. You know what I mean? When your team's sitting top in the Pacific and you have the star power that you do, Jack, relax. Get better. You know, come back when you come back. But it's interesting that he said that because, yeah, I'm wondering if he had a hard target or if Vegas are 2 points out of a playoff spot and could definitely use the help. Do we see him back? But he's got the luxury to just kind of take his time.
Yeah, and he has said, like, Eichel's been very honest with us this entire time about he's been very open about the timeline. And he said yesterday that there is no hard timeline. It's kind of just a feel thing. Like, we asked him, like, are there, like, milestones you're trying to hit? And he basically said, like, no, not really. He's like, the first 2 weeks, I was kind of getting used to how I feel now. I guess you feel different after getting an artificial disc put in your neck. Now he said, I pretty much feel back to normal. This is just a feel thing. I'm on the ice. I'm trying to get my timing, my flow back. The team is not pressuring me at all. They've told me, like, take your time. We do not, like you said, they're not in a position where they're trying to rush him back to try to make a playoff spot. This team's in good shape, even with the injuries that they have with Max Pacioretty out now with wrist surgery. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be fun to see when he gets back. This team, like we were talking to Mark Stone yesterday, and Mark Stone made it sound like they are not going to play on the same line, which I agree with because I think Mark Stone and Jack Eichel are both superstars who can power their own line. I think putting them both on one line is kind of diminished returns. This team, if they've got a line with Mark Stone and Max Pacioretty and another line with Jack Eichel and some combination of Marchessault, Riley Smith, like this team is absolutely stacked.
Yeah, it's unfair. And I love his line afterwards that he's like kid at Christmas.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, we can all kind of relate when you get to do something like that. And that's the other thing I really like about this situation. You said he stayed after practice. He's helping teammates. He's so happy to be there. You know what I mean? And you can understand what, given what he's gone through, given the battle, given and to have him do this and suddenly the surgery looks like it's going well, recovery from it. He's going to an elite Stanley Cup contending team. They're welcoming him with open arms. I mean, this almost seems Disney-like when it comes to Jack Eichel. For a poor guy who's been suffering in hockey hell for a very long time. And, you know, a buddy of mine texted me. We have a chat group where we talk hockey. And he said, you know, this was right after the Ken Holland presser. He's like, imagine Connor McDavid just looking at Jack Eichel now going, you bastard. Like, look what you have and look what I'm going through. When you look at that tandem, right? It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, when Eichel steps on the ice for a Golden Knights playoff game, it'll be his first playoff game of his entire career. That's like
crazy.
That's hard to believe that he could be that good and have never stepped on the ice in an NHL playoff game before.
But that's the unfortunate thing with this sport. You know what I mean? There are other sports like that doesn't happen in basketball.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? You put an elite player on a shitty team and that team suddenly is playoffs. So much better. Yeah. Yeah. Whereas we're talking 40-second shifts and 22 minutes a game, and that's at most, and there's only so much one person can do. But man, that team, you're right. You got a good gig. You get to watch that team when it's all together. But you're right, salary cap issue. Man, that's a lot of money to get under the cap. Signing this week, Tuukka Rask, one-year deal, $1 million with the Boston Bruins. Obviously, he was recovering from that hip surgery, which is always interesting when you talk about the loopholes that comes with the CBA is what I was trying to say there. Said he never really considered retiring in the offseason, but you got to wonder anytime it's this late. But I think the Bruins will be happy to see Tuukka Rask back.
For sure. Yeah, that's a big boost. You don't know what he's going to be. Like, what is he going to be, the Tuukka Rask? Like, as someone who plays goalie, hip surgery sounds terrifying. It is so much pressure on your hips. And that's just me, like, playing with my buddies in beer league. Yeah. Like, I'm not putting the pressure on it that Tuukka Rask is in an NHL game. Like, it's scary. Like, that's... When I see hip surgery, that makes me worry. But welcome him back. They could definitely use some solid goaltending right now.
That being said, people I know who have gotten hip surgery, it's almost the other way around. It's not like a knee surgery really, where you're like, oh, this knee's going to bug me for... I've known people who couldn't walk. Now, again, they're not professional athletes.
Right.
But they couldn't walk. They get hip surgery and they're like, my life is now fantastic. Like, wow. I'm pain-free. Yeah, so...
That's good to know.
Yeah, that's it's one of those weird things where once you get it fixed, it's better. Again, I was sick the day they taught hip surgery in high school, so I'm not, I know about as much about hip surgery as I do, the sixth round of the NHL entry draft.
I know a lot more about spine surgery than I did 6 months ago. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it's so funny when in our line of work, when something weird like that happens and suddenly you just have to go, okay, I'm going to buckle up and do the research.
Yeah. And, well, I talked to like three spine surgeons. I'm like, this is not something, this is not interviews I thought I'd be doing.
Yes. And then suddenly you're like, you know what? I think I can do the surgery. Right. The scalpel. I've done enough research. I think I can pull this off. A while back, we talked about Rod Brindamore getting that big fine for being angry on the bench. Rick Bowness got a big one. $25,000. He slammed his stick, of course, upset at officials. He's not doing that because he's upset at his own team or anything. I saw somebody tweet, if that was a player who hits another player over the head with a stick, the most he's getting fined is $5,000. And now you've got a coach getting 20. I might be old school. I like seeing coaches lose it. It's one of my favorite things. I always feel bad for them because they don't have that outlet. You know, if a player is angry, he goes out, he's pissed off, it might actually help the team. A poor coach is sitting there in a suit. He just wants to let off some steam, and he does, and it's $25,000 fine. I love watching it.
Me too. That video of him hitting the stick was so funny. I watched it like 100 times. Yeah, it's great. I've been lucky here in Vegas. Both these coaches blow up. Like Gerard Gallant, he just tried to rip the paper out of the referee's hand a couple nights ago. That was great. I enjoy a good coach getting angry at the referee.
Well, hopefully Julian McKenzie doesn't get angry with us and slam a stick, because he's coming up next. The Athletic NHL associate editor and also the co-host of the Chris Johnson Show. And we'll talk a lot with him, including Mark Bergevin, not out of work long. So don't go anywhere. We'll talk to Julian in just a couple minutes.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, for the first time in 2022, you just missed us too much. Julian McKenzie joining us on the Wednesday Roundtable. How are you, Julian? Happy New Year.
I'm doing very well. Happy New Year to you, too. I missed you, buddy. Missed you, Jesse. Good to see you guys. Sad that Sivvy's not here.
We could use a week off from her. I'm
kidding, Sarah. The podcast will be free from francophone Quebec slander from Sivvy.
I was going to say, like, we're going to talk about Montreal media, and she'd just be sitting here telling you guys are terrible.
We've been spared.
Sarah knows we love her. Good to see you as well. We got Jesse and I crammed a bunch of topics into our opening segment, but we got a lot to talk about. I wanted to ask you, obviously, just given where you are and given a team you know pretty well, the Marc Bergevin news, senior advisor to the GM of the Los Angeles Kings. That didn't take long. I mean, I thought really he'd put his feet up and after being in one of the most stressful jobs in the NHL, as far as GMs go and the microscope you're under, I thought he would just chill out for a year, but I guess he just wants to be around the game.
Yeah, I think so too. And I still think more importantly than anything, I think he really wanted to be in a market where he did not have the pressures of a Montreal. You know, being in LA, which I don't know if you guys realize this, the city, the team, I think there was like a report in the New York Post about a couple months ago when Bergevin was still GM that suggested that, you know, hey, don't be surprised if the Los Angeles Kings are a team that Marc Bergevin ends up being connected to should something happen to his job. Lo and behold, he ends up going there. I mean, obviously the familiarity with Luc Robitaille as president of the team, I think that plays a role in that. But also just being in LA, like the Los Angeles Kings, they have their fans, but there are so many other teams in the state of California for people to care about. You can just walk around Venice Beach or do whatever you want to just like hang out. Like, I'm not as surprised that I figured he's going to find himself a different job, even if it wasn't going to be a GM thing. The 42 days out of work, maybe it's a little bit soon, but like the fact that he's able to find himself a new gig on the West Coast, like, I think that's pretty much a perfect scenario for Marc Bergevin. Free of the English, French media coming at him, the Canadian market, all that. Like, he gets to chill. Like, yesterday in Montreal, it was like minus 34 with the wind chill. I wonder what the temperature was like in LA yesterday.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned just the fact that it's LA. Like, I always think of that was one of the things that Wayne Gretzky always said when he got traded to LA. He's like, we just go out for dinner and nobody bugs us. You know, Marc Bergevin can't go out to dinner in Montreal when you're the GM of the team and have nobody bug you. And he's got the cushiest gig. My dream job when I get older is to be a senior advisor. The guy who just, at the end of the meeting, they go, Pizzo, what do you think? That's the job I want.
Dude, that's a cushy job. And like, I'm sure like either you've made enough money in your life where you could just take a job like that and just be like, all right, whatever, I'll just come to the office. Or the advisor job, like they pay you like a decent amount where it's just like, all I have to do is just be the last guy to just be like, all right, this sounds cool. Like, you know what? You're changing my perspective on life, Pizzer. You know what? I think when I reach like 55, 60, like I don't mind if I'm not able to be at a point where I'm not retired or anything. If I could still be a senior advisor somewhere and still make some money, like I think I'm doing all right for myself. You
senior advisor on the West Coast.
Yeah.
The West Coast. Dude.
On the West Coast.
He zooms into meetings like from the beach. Like, are you kidding me? This is like perfect for him.
Oh, man. That is just, that's amazing for me. So, I'm not surprised that Marc Bergevin found himself work. And I'm not surprised at all that he found it in a market that, I mean, compared to what it is in Montreal, the fans and media attention, not nearly as rampant as it is in the La Belle Province.
Any news on the GM search?
Just every day just trying to see like who's still in the running. I think Pierre LeBrun the other day said that there were still quite a handful of candidates out there.
I feel like the list gets bigger every time I look at it.
Yeah, like first they said it was 8, and then like I was like, I think it was 9. I think it's like 10 now. I'm really intrigued at the names. Like a lot of people, like every time I talk to people about who the new GM was going to be, there was like a little while where I seriously thought, okay, Mathieu Darche is going to be the guy. And like he obviously has the connection with Tampa Bay, and he was with Julien Brisebois, and we all Julien Brisebois once upon a time was in the Canadiens organization. And you think, okay, it makes perfect sense for Mathieu Darche because he comes from the best team in hockey, and then he gets to be in a situation where he could be a GM. But now I think about it, like considering the way the structure, the management structure is in Montreal, where you have Jeff Gorton pretty much running everything, and whoever's going to be the GM, yes, they're saying it's going to be in tandem, but it's an easy position to put a younger, more inexperienced person there. Like, I think of a person like Daniel Briere, who's running an ECHL franchise, and I don't think he necessarily looks as bad of an option. I think Marc Denis is in the running for this as well. This is a guy who played in the NHL as a goalie and actually works for LDS and does the intermission reports. But a lot of people like to bring up the fact that he has those connections to QMJHL teams in the province, and he's a better hockey mind than some people give him for. And people are thinking, hey, maybe the name that pops up is going to be someone that no one really thought about. And in the world that we're in now, where we're looking at, okay, it has to be Darche because he was the guy with the Lightning. Martin Madden's name came up in Anaheim because he's a Quebec guy, and he knows how to deal with prospects and stuff. And that's a point of issue with the Montreal Canadiens. We may very well end up with somebody nobody really thought about. And a friend of mine made the point to me the other day when Marc Bergevin was hired as the Montreal Canadiens GM. I can't think of too many people who thought of him as the guy. I don't think he was hyped up. I'm trying to remember. I think Pierre Maguire got more hype for that job than Marc Bergevin did. It wouldn't surprise me if the name that we see as the GM for the Montreal Canadiens is a name that we probably didn't think about that much in comparison to some of the other names that are out there. And they end up getting their bearings in this position through this job.
I think you make a great point about the dynamic with Jeff Gorton, because I think it changes the way you can make this hire. I think you can, like, we talk a lot about like players when you're drafting them, like the guy with the high ceiling, the guy with the low floor. To me, if you don't have Gorton, you've got to be like this. We can't get this wrong. Like, you almost have to make the safer choice. Like, we pick someone that we know won't screw this up with all the pressure that there is. But I think with Gorton, it, like you said, it kind of allows someone to grow on the job, someone to learn. You can go for that higher ceiling. Like, look, this person may not have the experience, but we love the way they think hockey. I agree with you. I think it could be someone from out of left field, and it could be someone that they think maybe isn't the best person for the job right now, but they can grow into it. And the dynamic with Gorton allows that.
And to add that too, I didn't even mention Émilie Castonguay and Daniel Sauvageau, two women, obviously, who,
yeah,
it, with the Canadiens thinking of trying to be a little bit more diverse. We know they did that with their new VP of comms job, hiring longtime reporter Chantal Maccabee. That's also another option for them as well. Two great hockey minds, Sauvageau being around different teams, and Castonguay being a player agent. Like, I think there's the possibility for them to go out of left field and just find somebody new. And you'll notice I didn't mention Patrick Waugh's name because, well, that would just, as far as I'm concerned, be a nuclear option at that point. Because, I mean, I know he's been around different teams, and I know he has that pedigree there, and we all know what he's done with the Montreal Canadiens. I still just think he's just too volatile for that job. And I still think of him as somebody who ultimately wants so much power. In Quebec with the Remparts, like, he is, like, he's pretty much everything. Judge, jury, and executioner with the Quebec Remparts. I can't help, I don't, would he really want to be in a situation where he works in tandem or below Jeff Gorton, if that's what truly is the situation there? I'm not convinced he wants that. I can understand why the Canadiens would want to be in a position where they want to listen to him. I just don't see Patrick Waugh as this guy. He would have to really change how he goes about things and really impress the Canadiens and really make them really like sell them on the fact that he's willing to take a backseat to Jeff Gorton and the rest of the Canadiens front office.
We're talking about the St. Patrick Waugh, or is it somebody else you're talking
that's,
about?
That's
not
it,
happening.
Man. Like,
not happening.
That's it. I don't know, man. Like, that's just, I don't know if he's that guy. And I think at this point, for people who want to fly that flag, he's trying to make himself the people's champ because a lot of fans obviously want that. It doesn't make sense to me.
Jeff Gordon would tell him something and he'd be saying, I got my two Stanley Cup rings plugging my ears. There's no way. There's no way. One of my favorite lines of all time, by the way. Sticking with Canadian teams, we were talking as we were waiting for you to come on the show. And we're looking at games played because obviously the schedule is a complete and total mess right now. But Vegas is leading the way right now with 39 games played. All the way down to the bottom, you got the Islanders with 28. And of course, the Canadian teams, as we're seeing so many of these games being postponed by choice, it's causing a huge mess. And you look at a team like the Edmonton Oilers, now just on the outside looking in, they're free falling. Is this going to create just a crazy situation where you've got teams trying to get themselves back in a playoff spot, playing 5-7 and just run out of gas? Or on the other side, they do actually get themselves back in a playoff spot and the playoffs start and they are out of gas. I mean, this seems like the end of this year is going to be just a mess.
Yeah, if you're a schedule maker, man, like, I do not envy your job. But I also wonder how much of a, you know, a case-by-case situation it is for each of these teams. I'm just going to throw Montreal in here just because I know they're not going to be competitive by any stretch of the imagination. But this is a team that was hit so badly with COVID and they found themselves in a position where on like New Year's Day, they were basically playing with a roster that would not work out for a preseason game. But since then, they've had the layoff and they've had more and more guys come out of COVID protocol. And they're bit by bit, they're eventually going to get to a point where they could field a healthy roster on the ice. I don't know the situation for every single team, but for teams that have been hit hard by COVID, for example, like they might be able to take advantage of the way the schedule is kind of set and try to heal up and then maybe go on that run. But maybe there are teams which correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not sure when the Oilers play again. I think there might be some time in terms of when they're going to play again. But because of the fact that they were already in free fall and other teams might be able to step up on them, that is going to hurt. I think it's a case by case situation for everybody. And I think the teams that ultimately are the healthiest, and maybe this is kind of like a Captain Obvious thing, but with COVID running rampant as it is and affecting locker rooms as it is, we might see a situation where the teams least affected by COVID truly are the ones who take advantage of the situation and end up in those playoff spots near the end. And teams that either are grossly affected by COVID or were just so pushed far back because they played so badly, I'm thinking of the Oilers here, they might be negatively affected. This might be a hot take. I can see the Oilers missing the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, it's really not that hot of a take seeing as they're on the outside looking in right now. I just look at this and Jesse and I have talked about this a lot with Sarah. COVID protocol is so crazy because some players that you're suddenly missing because of COVID protocol aren't feeling a damn thing. You know, Jesse's talked about players coming out of the 10-day quarantine saying, I feel fine. I had COVID a couple weeks ago. I did not feel fine. A flight of stairs for me was tough. It wiped me out. So when you've got teams being, you know, lost players because of that, and then they're sitting in a hotel room going, this is ridiculous. My team needs me. Want to ask you about something else. John Klingberg, not a happy guy right now. It's not public. He didn't say I demanded a trade, but he didn't not say he demanded a trade. Your thoughts on this whole situation and where he might end up? Because all I keep seeing is Vancouver, 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 but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
I saw an article on The Athletic suggesting the Leafs might want him. And the thing I thought about, which was kind of funny, is when I saw the comments where he was essentially saying that he seemed to be pretty disappointed in how the Stars were kind of handling it, while also outright saying that, you know what, he's not necessarily asking for a trade. I kind of felt that all the unrest kind of surrounding him now, maybe ironically, drove up the market for him, because this is a guy who's going to want some money. This is a guy, I think, being paid a little over $4 million, but he's also 29. Like, he's still got some of his best years ahead of him as a player, but we're not talking about a guy who's going to be entering his peak. We're talking about a guy who's going to be exiting his peak. So I'm really curious as to what the Stars might want to offer him and other prospective teams who may very well be desperate for a player of his ilk, but we also live in the cap world that we live in right now that has not inched all that much in the last few years because of COVID and hockey-related revenue and what have you. Like, John Klingberg's in a really interesting situation. He'll get paid somewhere, and maybe it's in Dallas, maybe it's somewhere else. But kind of thinking of some thoughts Sean Gentile said yesterday, like, I kind of feel for him. Like, he's in a situation where, like, he played a lot of his, like, the last few years where he could have easily gotten himself, like, a much different contract, like a Cale Makar-esque contract at, like, $9 million. But he's already played through much of his 20s, and whatever deal he gets is going to be given with the idea in mind that, you know, your peak, if you haven't already hit it, is coming. You know, like, I kind of feel for him. Whatever money he's gonna be due to get, unless some GM has amples of cap room to do it. I don't know if John Klingberg wants to go to Arizona. Whatever he gets, I don't truly think he's gonna feel he's not gonna get fully maxed out. You know, not that we necessarily have, not that we talk about max deals in the NHL the same way we do in the NBA, but, like, whatever he gets, like, he'll get paid. It's not gonna be any more than what I think he would really want, which is something that he probably would have wanted, like, maybe 3-4 years ago if he was in this situation, if that makes sense.
You're right that the cap isn't moving, but also the market for defensemen is, like, sky high right now. It seems like all the defensemen that have hit the market have been gotten paid ridiculous amounts.
And righties are at a premium too, right? He's right-handed. Right.
That is very true. Yeah. He's a right shot.
Like, yeah. Alex Pietrangelo, who's also a right shot, just signed. And Klingberg's not Alex Pietrangelo, but
no,
Alex Pietrangelo is much older, and he just got himself a 7-year deal worth $8.9 million a year. I don't expect Klingberg to get that, but I do think that he's young enough to get still a big deal, and especially with the way these contracts have been handed out to defensemen lately.
That's a fair point. Like, what, like 6-7? Oh, because you're right. He's not Alex Pietrangelo. Like, he's not someone of the same caliber as him, but he's still a very good defenseman. But
right,
if he was 25 asking for this, maybe he gets that 9.
For sure.
One more thing before we let you go. The HDA, the Hockey Diversity Alliance, and Budweiser released this 2.5-minute video. Had Wayne Simmonds, Matt Dumba, Anthony Duclair, Akeem Alou, Chris Stewart, and Trevor Daley. And it was kind of highlighting some of the real world abuse that these players go through and the racism that they'd be facing on a regular basis. And This was an eye-opening video. They didn't hold back any punches. They had to blur some things when they did it on TV because of the language they used. But just wanted to get your opinions, both of you guys, on this because, you know, I heard about it, I saw it, and my eyes pretty much popped out of my head. We'll start with you, Julian.
This is not a surprise. Players go through this, and not even just players. Just people want to get into hockey. People want to get into sports. Persons of color in different facets of their life go through this. And it's good that you watched it, Rob, and you felt something about this. It's good that other people are going to watch this and they're going to be like, wow, like, this is something that happens. Because the truth of the matter is, it happens. Like, not long either before or after the ad campaign was unveiled, there was that story that went out of Prince Edward Island of a hockey player being subjected to racial abuse, and then his teammate sticks up for him by slashing the guy because he feels that the guy doing the abuse is not being properly reprimanded. Like, this is stuff that happens, and this is stuff that has to be eradicated from not just the game of hockey, but just from just culture as it is. However, because we talk about hockey as often as we do, because there are the problems with hockey culture, this is something that poisons hockey culture. So when you see people go out of their way to see something like this and be like, oh, this is a problem that affects everything else and you shouldn't single out hockey culture. I mean, the fact that the players themselves had to be like, hey, we're not in it to disrupt hockey culture and make it a thing. We've made hockey culture into this, like, buzz term that if you say anything negative about it, it's like, whoa, you're this uppity person who wants to talk smack about hockey culture. Hockey culture is great. Hockey culture is awesome. Like, well, how dare you come for this game? Well, I'm sorry to tell you, hockey culture, at the end of the day, as much as it has benefited us in the positions that we're in right now, in terms of the fact that there is hockey and the games that are there, there's some bullshit in hockey culture that needs to be dealt with. And the fact that the HDA wants to address this significant part of it head on and let people know that it's not okay for this to happen is, you know, I applaud them for their bravery in stepping up to talk about that. But I'll just end with this too. What still bugs me about all the HDA stuff is the fact that the NHL is not as supportive with it as it should be.
And in talking with my good buddy Chris Johnston about it, he's saying, hey, you know, there could be a money thing between both sides. Now they're negotiating it. I just feel for some of these things, it's not about money. You know, like you have to understand that in the world that we're in right now, so many other people are getting into so many other sports, not just because of the fact that the costs aren't that crazy to get into other sports, but the way that hockey culture is, it will turn people off and get them into other sports. People have to realize that if you fix hockey culture and you try to at least make it more opening and accessible to some of these other disenfranchised communities or just minority communities in general, you're ultimately going to help save the game. But if you're going to have even NHL players worry about being called racial slurs in games or having stuff thrown at them, like if I'm a young guy hearing all that stuff, why would I want to get involved in it? Not to mention it's expensive enough as it is anyway. Like, we have to stop being afraid of saying that hockey culture is bad and thinking, oh man, like we're going to piss people off by saying that. Like, hockey culture as it is needs work, and it's okay to care enough about the game and love the game as much as you do, but also acknowledge that it needs to be fixed. And fixing racial abuse that happens to persons of color in this game is a huge step towards making it better for everyone involved.
Well said, Julian. We'll leave it right there. Thanks, buddy. Always a pleasure having you on. We'll talk to you probably in the next few weeks. We got to get you on every now and again, hey, just to keep the continuity going.
You already know I will make time for you, Pizzer. I will always make time for Jesse. I thought Sivy would make time for me today, but I understand. They've got other things to do. I'm not hurt.
You're disappointed.
You don't sound hurt.
You're disappointed.
Yeah, I don't hurt. I'm not hurt. I get it. I understand. But in all seriousness, guys, I'll talk to you guys soon.
Thanks, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Julian.
Twitter questions coming up right after the break.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
All right, time of the week where we take a look at your Twitter questions. And you know what, Jesse? I'm cheating. I'm going to absolutely cheat. There was one Twitter topic that kind of dominated and people were writing about it, and I wanted to bring it up, and we're just going to meld this into one Twitter question, and that's involving your piece on Robin Leonard. Every week I ask you and Sarah what you're working on. You kind of kept saying, I'm working on this piece, working on this piece. I couldn't wait to read it. I did read it, and I immediately texted you saying, just fantastic. Just a great piece dealing not only with Robin Leonard, but his influence on mental health. Walk us through a bit of that, just putting that whole thing together, because it was far from a hockey story. It was a story that showed that a hockey player could really inspire a lot of people.
Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, it was a rewarding story. I learned a lot. I kind of attacked this differently. This story, I've written a lot about Robin Leonard and his openness to mental health and the things he said. And I didn't want to write this from Robin Leonard's perspective. I didn't even speak to Robin Leonard for the story. I found the mental health organization, same here, that he's been working with for a couple years. I talked to Eric Cusin, who is doing great work with that organization, trying to change the way we look at the subject of mental health. And through him, I found multiple people that Robin Leonard has touched their lives in different ways. And one person, Robin Leonard actually met her, Gabriella Smith. He actually met her in person and said some, and like she mentioned, like it was not the interaction you normally see with professional athletes and fans where they're like, hey, thanks for being a fan. Here's an autograph. Here's a picture, yeah, and I'm out.
she told him that she struggles with mental health. She's also a goalie. And she said Robin Leonard's tone immediately changed. She started asking her, how are you feeling? What have you been going through? What kind of medications are you on? Like questions that you do not expect Robin Leonard, like this guy, this professional NHL player who's got a million things to do, to stop and ask. And it became a reoccurring trend. Everyone I talked to that had talked to Robin Leonard about anything to do with this said they could not believe how caring he was and how much he wanted to help. And then there are some people who haven't ever spoken to Robin Leonard. They've never messaged him. They've never had any contact with Robin Leonard, but they're just as impacted by him in his, just him saying, like the thing that stood out to me was Robin Leonard says a lot of really good stuff and he has great perspectives on things in this subject, but sometimes it's not even the actual words he's saying. It's just the fact that he's talking about it. Just the fact that an NHL player, professional athletes are so trained to hide any sort of weakness, whether it be mental or physical of any kind. You cannot show weakness. And the fact that Robin Leonard is so open about the mental health issues that he struggled with, how he overcame them. He's an example for people out there that are going through similar things, that you can succeed in whatever you're doing despite that. And I think he's set a great example for a lot of people. He's changed the way a lot of people think about mental health. To me, I think about it differently than I did before this story. Eric Cusin, to me, he has a lot of great philosophies on it, but I think the one that stood out to me was a lot of mental health organizations out there say 1 in 5 people struggle with mental health issues, and they're trying to show how common it is, but it's actually unintentionally creating the stigma of, okay, so 20% of you have problems, and then the other 80%, you don't have to worry about it. You're good. When that's actually not the case at all. And the way Robin and the way Eric think about mental health is similar to physical health, in that you've got some people who are in phenomenal shape. You've got some people who aren't in as good a shape and need a lot of work. But even the people who are in great shape, you get injuries. You get things that happen to you that suddenly you're struggling with it. And that's how mental health is. We all deal with stuff. And I think if we all kind of thought about things in that way, not only would we help ourselves more, would we get more help for ourselves when you're not feeling good, you can admit, hey, I'm going through something right now. I need to get help. But I also think we would treat everyone a little bit better when you think about it, that like you're not the only one going through things. Everyone is. And the person you're talking to at the grocery store, the person you're mad at that pulled in front of you in that lane when you were driving, we're all going through stuff. You never know what people are going through. If we all just admitted that we were going through stuff and we tried to help everyone, I think we'd be in a lot better spot. And I think Robin Leonard, through doing the reporting for this story, I found out that he's doing a lot to move us in that direction. I think he's ahead of his time.
And simply, as you said, by flipping on a light and just showing it. Yeah, I don't find Robin Leonard to be preachy or doing anything that makes you after a while kind of go, yeah, we get it. He's just put a light on it and inspired so many people. So make sure to head to The Athletic and read that. It was great piece, Jesse. Just great piece.
Thank you.
I just got a text from Sarah before we go. She said, heartbroken to miss the Kodak Black convo. If you don't know what we're talking about, go to Twitter and just look up Kodak Black. Make sure your kids are not around when you are doing it. You said before we went on the air, you kind of said it was just one of the most enjoyable moments on Twitter that you've had in a while. Walk us through your night as you're seeing the video of Kodak Black getting just grinded hard on.
Yeah. So yes, hockey Twitter is a fun place, and sometimes it's more fun, sometimes it's less fun. Last night, I found it to be incredibly fun. George Richards, a reporter for the Florida Panthers, tweeted out, it appears that the rapper Kodak Black, who was attending the game, the NHL had tweeted out photos of him at the game saying, hey, look who's at the game tonight. It appeared he was having sexual relations with a woman in the suite. Not back in the suite in a room, like it was
like right
people
there.
People in the arena were filming it. And everyone had a lot of fun with it. It was pucks in deep. It was all the cliches that anyone could, any hockey cliche you've ever thought of, someone found a way to connect it to that Kodak Black
hitting
video
from behind. Yeah.
And then someone posts a video from inside the suite showing that it was not sexual relations. It was just a very aggressive dance. Very aggressive. And then Sean McIndoe, who we have here on the Athletic Hockey Show, as he always does, he nailed it. That guy has better comedic timing. I do not know someone who's funnier than that guy. He is so good. And he quote tweets the video that says, proving that it wasn't, they weren't having sex, saying, man, another time in the NHL where we thought we scored and then video review calls it back. And then the scouting the refs Twitter, that Twitter that all they tweet about is refs, tweets it with like, after upon review, we couldn't tell if the puck crossed the line, so we were going to leave the call as stands on the ice. It was phenomenal. It was phenomenal. It was hockey Twitter at its best.
Hockey Twitter. You know what? It could be a great place, a terrible place. Last night was a sexual place. Jesse, it was a blast doing this. We'll talk to you next week, buddy.
Yeah, it was awesome.
All right, want to let you guys know about some other hockey coverage at the Athletic Hockey Show. Michael Russo is going to welcome Kaapo Kähkönen on this week's edition of Straight from the Source. And Chris Johnston joins Jonas Siegel and James Myrtle this week on the Leaf Report. Thank you for listening to us on the Athletic Hockey Show. Give us a follow on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to leave a rating and a review. It really helps us out a lot. You can subscribe to the Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts to get all the bonus content from our entire network. You start with a 30-day free trial, then it's 99 cents a month after that. And right now you get an annual subscription to The Athletic for just $3.99 a month when you visit theathletic.com/hockeyshow. The Athletic Hockey Show continues Thursday with Ian Mendez and Down Goes Brown. For me, for Jesse, and yes, even for Sarah. We'll see you next week.